Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, 14th of February. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 14th of February, 2020. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with our usual notices. The first is to say if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please first check the box is plugged into the mains before you telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And as you listen to the recording, do remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Winchester Talking News, all one word, no spaces. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order. The most recent is first on the list. So let's take a look at what's in this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard, who is reading in for Peter Walker, who has been unwell, I'm sorry to say, but is making very good progress towards health again. And I am your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Moving on to the news, here are the headlines. Major plan for barracks. Retired doctor took his own life. Patients' anger at the closure of dentists. And the first headline item is from Claire, please.
Major plan for barracks. Proposals to build hundreds of homes on the site of the army training camp in Winchester are being discussed, the Chronicle can reveal. Winchester City Council and the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, part of the Ministry of Defence, are working together to develop a scheme for the future of Sir John Moore Barracks. The training camp was due to close next year, but it was given a temporary reprieve in 2019, and the MOD will now leave the site in 2024 as part of the Defence Estate Optimism Programme. Talks have begun on the future of the site, with the current proposal for 800 houses being explored. The scheme could also meet the City Council's vision for a park and ride north of the city, assisted care living, and the reuse of existing facilities. The finer details have not yet been revealed. An MOD spokesperson said, "We are working with Winchester City Council on a number of proposals for the future use of the site. We will be submitting proposals for the site under their local plan review and are currently considering a mix of development options, including the retention of some of the existing facilities." The scheme was discussed at Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council last month, with Councillor Kelsey Lerney, the City Council's Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, stating that there had so far been no submissions from public bodies to reuse the barracks. During the meeting, a concern was raised about the infrastructure on Andover Road and King's Barton to allow for the increased traffic that will occur as a result of the plan for the barracks. The plan is set to be reviewed by the City Council in the spring. City and Parish Councillor Patrick Cunningham said, "The Parish Council would prefer to see a mixed development which would integrate and include these various different things. There is such a lovely and viable leisure facility there. The Parish Council wished to see that return for the use of the community." As previously reported, the future use of Sir John Moore Barracks, which opened in 1986 to replace Peninsula Barracks in the city centre, is currently up in the air. Previously, the Winchester Lib Dems called for the site to be used for a hospital to replace the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, currently on Romsey Road. There was also hopes that the land could become a science park, and this idea was endorsed by the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, and Winchester MP Steve Brine also spoke of the need for the land to be used commercially. Winchester City Council were contacted for a comment but did not respond by the time the Chronicle went to print.
Retired doctor took own life. A retired Winchester doctor took his own life after he was interviewed by police over a historical allegation. Dr. Peter Betts, 76, suffered serious anxiety after being told about the case and died before police could tell him that they were taking no further action. The nature of the allegation was not revealed during his inquest in Winchester. The coroner's court heard that Dr. Betts's mental health deteriorated rapidly after being interviewed in September. He was found dead in the garden of his Compton home with stab wounds to his chest and heart on October the 14th. His son, Dr. Timothy Betts, said, "Retired for 14 years, he was an extremely well-respected paediatrician and a great father. We tried to tell him that he shouldn't be worried about the allegation, but he got more and more stress. It was against his entire nature and career, and the whole allegation process was a horror for him. His worry was that although he hadn't done anything wrong, the accusation would get out on social media and in the press. In the end, he wasn't himself, and his thinking went from rational to irrational." Detective Sergeant Andrew Hawkins had been involved in investigating the allegation. Although it had been decided to take no further action on October the 13th, police could not inform Dr. Betts until October the 21st due to the official process guidelines, he said. GP Dr. Mark Roberts said that Dr. Betts had been contemplating suicide days before his death. He added, "He told me that he felt like a metal coil that could go ping at any time." Senior Coroner Christopher Wilkinson concluded as death by suicide. Dr. Betts of Hurdle Way split his time between the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and Southampton General Hospital before moving to the latter permanently in 1989. At the time of his death, dozens of tributes poured in from former colleagues, patients and friends. Dr. Derek Sanderman, Medical Director at University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust, said, "Peter Betts was an inspirational paediatrician who worked here for more than 20 years, led the development of paediatric and child protection procedures, and was a key figure in the development of the unit. He also established a centre of excellence in paediatric endocrinology and diabetes, and was recognised nationally and internationally for his skills and expertise." Dr. Sanderman added, "He will be well known to many staff members and impacted massively on many children and their families. He was a gifted teacher and mentor and was loved by everyone."
Patients' anger at closure of dentists. Frustrated patients who have been met with a wall of silence from a dental company aired their anger. A group of disgruntled customers of Finest Dental showed up at the company's Southgate Street branch in Winchester after months of cancelled appointments and a lack of information. Amy Hoyle, 35, who had been undergoing treatment with Finest Dental for 4 years and had paid off a £3,500 finance agreement, but the work on her teeth had not been completed. "The last 5 or 6 months has been really difficult to get appointments, And appointments have been cancelled and changed, the Gosport woman said. Ultimately, they said they would keep me in the loop. This was 2 weeks before Christmas, and I haven't heard anything. The string of cancelled appointments has caused Miss Hoyle to be left with a large gap in her teeth. Before the trouble started, she had an extra wire fitted onto her brace, which was due to be taken off after around 6 weeks. But almost 5 months on, she has been left with the hole. It's disgusting how people can be that quick to take the money, she added. We are not happy. The staff obviously are not happy. We just want people's treatment finished and some sort of compensation. It is understood that Finest Dental is undergoing a restructure, but rumours have also emerged that the company is in liquidation and are about to be taken over. A post on its website states, Finest Dental is currently undergoing a restructure. Updates will be posted on this website regularly. Many clinics remain open to treat existing patients. Urgent arrangements are being made to ensure all patient treatment is completed. We are currently not accepting any new patients at this time. We apologise for any inconvenience caused. Further updates to be added shortly. For one patient, Laura Nishita, the wait is worse as she is currently facing pain after a section of her teeth fitted by the surgery has fallen out. Mrs. Nishita has undergone 7 implants, a bone graft and sinus lift at the Winchester Clinic, paying £8,260. Her treatment started in October 2017, but in August 2018, she was told that her implants have been made incorrectly. We had to keep coming back again and again. They keep feeding us stories, the 42-year-old said. They changed my first crown because it was made wrong. Now in December, I've had a big infection. I couldn't clean my teeth. It was impossible. Now I have pain because something is happening in my gum. Despite the company claiming they are not taking on new patients, a week ago, David Craddock of Cheriton signed up to get a second opinion on work that is needed doing. I couldn't get hold of them on the phone, so I came in on Monday and booked an appointment for today. Then yesterday, I got these texts saying, sorry, we are going to have to cancel your appointment. Ring back next week to rearrange, Mr. Craddock, 66, said. But he was then told that the company was not taking on any new patients. However, with the closure of the branch, he has been unable to retrieve a report on his dental work. Another of those who's been affected is Malcolm Wheeler's partner, Natasha Gunby.
I thank you very much, everybody. And we'll have the death notices now. Appleyard, Sir Vincent Appleyard, KCMG, peacefully after a long illness on the 7th of February 2020.
Beck, Sally Beck, née Hobbs, late of Colden Common, sadly passed away after a long illness on the 27th of January, aged 66 years.
Dent, Dieter Dent, sadly passed away after a short illness on Sunday the 9th of February.
Iles, Graham Iles. Graham passed away on the 31st of January 2020.
Gilbert, Bette Gilbert, Kathleen Elizabeth, passed away peacefully on Sunday, 2nd of February 2020.
Mitten, Frederick James, Fred Mitten, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on 24th of January, aged 73 years.
Osmond, Matthew Lee Osmond, passed away on the 2nd of February 2020.
Reader, Jan Kathleen Reader, née Pickett, late of Colden Common, at home on the 27th of January 2020, aged 87 years.
Seal, Dennis Den Seal of Sparsholt, died suddenly but peacefully on the 4th of February, aged 81 years.
Stenning, Sheila Catherine Dorothy Stenning, passed peacefully and with dignity on Tuesday 28th of January 2020, aged 85, at Flower Down Care Home.
We have Christian comment now, and it's contributed by Rosemary Baker, and Claire's going to read it for us, please.
This is headed Trees at Centre of News and Beliefs. I have just listened to the midday news and heard that the expected go-ahead has been given to HS2, the proposed high-speed railway from London to Birmingham and then further north. There was then an interview with the leader of a protest group who were against this because of the number of ancient woodlands that will be destroyed. We were told that to offset this and to achieve our country's goals for climate change, trees absorb carbon dioxide, which is what causes global warming, many new trees would be planted. This meant that yesterday's headline of more cases of the new coronavirus infection was relegated to second place, and the newly announced divorce of the Queen's grandson hardly mentioned at all. The fires in Australia and also the Amazon and in the USA will have destroyed many more trees. More local storms and floods will also have caused losses. Some people, and some Christians among them, believe that natural disasters such as storms, floods, fires, and outbreaks of disease are the result of our punishment for sin by God. Indeed, this is a long-held belief in some faiths and by our ancestors. What does seem to be the cause, at least of the majority of these disasters, is humanity itself, and the way we have treated and continue to treat our planet, God's creation. From deforestation, whether for agriculture or high-speed trains or other developments, to the way we treat animals, we have looked to the short-term gain and not the long-term consequences. Even when these have been pointed out to us, politicians and business have overridden these concerns. Of course, this is a much bigger and more complex subject than can be covered here. However, I did want to highlight the fact that I believe as Christians we should concern ourselves much more with trees. Last Sunday night was the Jubishavat, the full moon of the Hebrew month of Shavat, the Jewish New Year for trees. In contemporary Israel, the day is celebrated as an ecological awareness day, and trees are planted in celebration. Trees are mentioned in the Bible more than any living thing other than God and people. And every major character has a tree associated with them. Jesus died on a tree because it was prophesied in the Old Testament. Trees, like Jesus, give rather than take. Trees give life and beauty. They give shade and rest. They clean the air. They hold back erosion. They offer shelter, food and protection. We now know that trees do in fact communicate with each other, and we are learning much more about them. We are also relearning much about their spiritual nature and their importance for our mental well-being, in addition to what we already knew about their benefits on our physical health. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you very much, Claire. And we're moving on to letters to the editor. And Richard has the first of our letters, please.
Which is entitled Tying Things Up. Ha ha. Mm-hmm. On February the 5th, The Guardian carried a photograph of part of the Tory benches in the House of Commons at Prime Minister's Questions on January the 29th. A glum-looking Steve Brine, seated in the second row close behind his old boss Matt Hancock, is sporting a blue tie of a hue similar to those worn by Sajid Javid and Alok Sharma on the front bench. Whilst blue is the most common colour on display amongst the 40 Tory MPs shown in the photo, four, including James Cleverly, also on the front bench, are wearing red ties of various shades and patterns. One is wearing a green tie. A closet environmentalist? 15 of the MPs are not wearing ties at all, but they're all women. Nevertheless, two of the women are wearing very reddish shades of pink. Elsewhere, black appears to be popular, although the Home Secretary stands out for her presumptuous choice of regal purple. And what of the Prime Minister? He's wearing a tie of indeterminate colour, artfully askew. What does this analysis tell us about the leanings and commitments of the MPs pictured? Absolutely nothing, of course. It might bring an end to the long correspondence in the Chronicle about Mr. Brine's sartorial choices and leave more space for issues of greater importance to our area, Martin Holmes, Calderwell Gardens, Winchester.
There's another letter which also mentions Steve Brine. This is from Nick Ray, and it's headed, "In Agreement, Sir. Keith Webb, Chronicle Letters, January the 30th, and I, and many other of your correspondents, can at least agree on one thing, that Steve Brine, MP, is unfit for political purpose. Whether this be for reasons of conflict of interest, with Steve bouncing his 80,000 plus expenses taxpayer-funded MP salary by 50% through fees from anti-NHS lobby groups, Steve's green rhetoric while voting against measures that could ameliorate climate change, or our own MP's willingness to take us down a stony Brexity path he knows has been laid illegally and misleadingly signposted, amongst many, many other things. But rather than persist in criticism in these pages of Steve's red tie on election night, perhaps Keith could spare your readers of his anxiety and just go to the top. Given that Prime Minister and leader of the Conservative Party, Boris Johnson, was sporting just such a red tie when on January the 24th in Downing Street he signed the Brexit withdrawal agreement. Over the next 12 months, we will all have bigger fish to fry, whether Grimsby Court or not, than what those shimmying down the Westminster or Winchester political catwalk care to sport, a la mode. And I fear that many in Winchester and throughout the divided, fractured United Kingdom, if they do care about such matters, will, attending the funeral of a once kinder, more coherent, open and successful country, be wearing only black." And that's written by Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter is from Hugh Lumby and is headed A272 Speeding. "We need to make our roads as safe as possible, both the main roads and the country lanes, addressing the twin issues of speeding and noisy bikes and other vehicles. CANS, the Campaign Against Noise and Speed, had a great public meeting in Westmeon last weekend on this issue. We learnt about the trials of acoustic cameras carried out late last year, as well as the impact average speed cameras can have. Both could have a great impact, but they also come at a cost, about £350,000 alone for the average speed cameras proposed on the A272 and the A32. The acoustic cameras are new technology and they need further trials. The next step should be for the Secretary of State to fund a wide-ranging pilot scheme. This could lead to a template that could be rolled out across the country. That pilot should be carried out on our roads. Rob Humby, as Hampshire County Council's roads boss, supports the proposal. Over to Flip Drummond as our new MP to lobby the minister to make this happen. Hugh Lumby, City Councillor, Upper Mearn Valley Ward, High Street, Mearnstoke.
Robin Shepherd, who is chair of the Bishop's Waltham Town team, writes about parking charges. As we approach the deadline for the Winchester City Council consultation on new parking charges and restrictions across the district, the Bishop's Waltham Town team emphatically opposes the Council's determination to adopt a single approach to parking. This would have a serious detrimental impact on our market town's sustainability and our High Street's future economic and social vibrancy. Bishop's Waltham, which incidentally was voted as Hampshire Village of the Year in 2019, relies on its current parking arrangements to enable its shops and services to benefit from a visible and vibrant local trade. We know for a fact that approximately 70% of people in the High Street on a Saturday morning visit from outside the parish. This includes those from parishes such as Durley, Swanmore, Curdridge, Upham and Droxford, as well as from Fareham and Eastleigh. It also enables town centre events to be well supported by the community and visitors. Increasing charges, removing the 1 hour free parking and ending free parking during evenings and Sundays, while significantly enhancing WCC income, would leave our market towns on a downward spiral of reduced trade and income and ultimately closure of shops and services as consumers increasingly use out-of-town supermarkets with free parking or drive to the city to take advantage of a cheap park and ride. The City Council must not impose a solution and pricing structure devised for its city centre on the market towns which function in different ways. In their consultation, the council suggests that their parking policy is driven solely by climate change and global warming responsibilities. This is disingenuous nonsense. While removing cars from densely populated urban areas with the offer of regular public transport makes perfect sense, it makes no sense at all for those living in areas such as Bishop's Waltham. Surely, we must encourage the rural consumer to travel the shortest distance to their local towns rather than distant hypermarkets and cities. Robin Shepherd, Chairman, Bishop's Waltham Town Team, Little Shore Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
Now, it's been far too long since we've had a letter mentioning Steve Bryan. So here's one written by James Anderson, and it's headed Tory Values. Sir, our MP Steve Bryan has been sounding off about South Western Railway and holding it to account. So he should, except that the primary culprit is the nationalised Network Rail, of which Mr Bryan's government is the manager. It was not a South Western train that derailed, not South Western signalling that has been an ongoing problem, nor the track works and so on. The train guards dispute too is a national issue. The challenges are not going to be solved by misattributing blame. Similarly, MP Bryan has been promoting his work for the NHS, except that is Mr Bryan's parliamentary vote that has been a contributor to the sudden and dramatic increase in waiting lists. It was the vote in support of Chancellor Osborne's pension changes and vicious tax penalties that led to the withdrawal of Labour by consultants. As one said to me recently, I am expected to pay to be allowed to work. When MP Bryan voted as Health Minister for these changes, he must have known the consequences. PR and spin are no answer. I do not recognise his responses as remotely representing Conservative values. That was written by James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Monkston.
This is a letter from Phil Yates, and it's headed A Sad Loss. I'm not generally in the habit of writing letters to the Chronicle 2 weeks running, but this is an exception. I was saddened to read in last week's issue of the passing of Daphne E. Smith, a regular contributor to the letters column of this paper for many years. The lovely tribute by her niece, Elaine Budden, says it all. I did not know Daphne personally, but I felt I did. She had a unique way of writing letters with a specific theme behind them. Her last letter at Christmas was a typical example. She will be missed, not only by her family and by the villagers of Cheriton. Daphne, like me, suffered from sight loss, but she had Elaine to help her in later years. I am the same age as Daphne, but like her, I am not into modern technology. In fact, I'm one of the few contributors who still type letters, and here I would like to thank the staff of the Chronicle for transferring my letters to the present system. That is one reason I keep my letters as short as possible, but hopefully to the point. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Storm thanks. At about 11 a.m. on Sunday morning, Storm Clara decided that a very large oak tree in Compton Street had been there long enough. So it blew it down and completely blocked the road. It inevitably took with it overhead electricity and telephone cables, thus removing power and communication from many of the residents. This letter is to convey thanks to the teams of people who responded so well and quickly to deal with the disaster. Hampshire County Council personnel worked tirelessly to cut up and remove the tree from the road. This allowed vehicle access to be available in the early evening. Special gratitude also to the Southern Electricity staff for their efforts to replace overhead cables in atrocious weather conditions. Power was restored to the village by 8 p.m. On behalf of all residents of Compton Street, I would like our thanks to be recorded for a tremendous and speedy response by all involved, including the fire service and police. Terry Wilson, Chairman, Compton Village Association, Compton.
And now a letter from Eileen Berry, headed History Lesson. Sir, as we are now 1 month into the new year, this usually means, to most people, a new beginning and hopefully a better year than the year that has passed. We're all now aware of the 75-year anniversary of the Holocaust. If, like me, you have followed the history of both world wars, it is very plain that, especially with the Second World War, Hitler and his followers were, from 1924, a minority. Their strategy being to speak publicly about what was wrong and why Germany was suffering. In his speeches, he promised so much, and people began to listen to him. His agenda was far from helping his people. It was his fanatical belief that Germany and the German people were superior and had to be cleansed of all impurities. Not just 6 million Jews, but, to our knowledge, 11 million besides. They were free-thinking people. They were from all walks of life and professions. Writers, artists, poets, doctors, professors, and other political persuasions, but they were a threat, and he wanted all of the academics that did not agree with him gone. The gypsies, the homosexuals, and the sadly, the mentally ill or disabled. How did a minority manage to convince a nation? Fear. Fear to give an opinion, fear to go into print, and this is what we must guard against. Freedom of speech, freedom to say things that worry you without being called a racist. Fear to print and to have your papers give an opinion. There is nothing wrong with giving an opinion. What is wrong is to say it my way or no way. I have overheard a conversation between three people wherein one said they must be mentally deranged because they did not agree politically with their point of view and were very uneducated and could not understand their mentality at all. Exactly the same phrases that were being used in Germany under Hitler with his propaganda. Get rid of the opposition because he didn't agree. That is what we must guard against. Intimidation by minorities. I am far from being a racist and I have the freedom to write this letter. And that letter was written by Eileen Berry of Prizedean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
This letter is from Fiona Mather and it's headed Time to Unite. It is understandable that Councillor Kim Gottlieb and his Liberal Democrat colleagues should feel devastated by the disastrous result for them of the recent general election and the uncertain consequences of Brexit. Chronicle Letters, February the 6th. Neither they nor anyone else can turn back the clock. It is the duty of all of us in a new and unprecedented situation to unite in the quest for the best possible outcome, national and local. Fiona Mather, City Councillor for St Michael Ward, St Michael's Gardens, Winchester.
Thank you all very much. And that concludes the letters. Now, Claire is going to do your say for us. Please.
Your say. Regular drug searches will be brought in at Swanmore College. What do you think? Anthony Michaels, who's 58, a PR consultant of Swanmore Close Hairstock. It's definitely the best way to prevent these kids from going down a slippery slope. Marcus Blakefield, who's 56 and an electrician of Wales Street, Winnell. We've got nothing to hide. Or you have got nothing to hide if you're innocent. Too right. Keep the kids safe as much as possible. Natalie Porter, who's 73 and a retired cleaner of Winchester, she said, I wish that was the case when I was younger. A lot of the people who started drugs early might have had better lives. And Roger Huck, who's 51, a truck driver of Hyde Street, Hyde. Kids will do drugs no matter what. This is a good start to stopping it, though.
Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. You could even drop in when you're in Winchester. And that leads me on to Chronicle comment. And so the editor writes about the future of St Sir John Moore Barracks. The redevelopment of Sir John Moore Barracks at Flowerdown has been bubbling under for a few years. We have reported that the army is due to move out soon, freeing up the large site. What with Station Hill, Silver Hill Saxon Gate and the new sports centre, the future of the base has been somewhat neglected. It would appear that the Ministry of Defence is proposing a mixed-use 800 homes, park and ride, assisted care living and the retention of some of the facilities, which were only built in the mid-1980s when the Army left Peninsula Barracks in Winchester City Centre in 1985. Business leaders will be disappointed that the idea of a business park is not currently being pursued. But 800 new homes, with 40% available to people on the council housing list, will make a big and welcome dent in the housing target. One aspect that needs to be kept in focus is the preservation of the chalk downland within the site. Hampshire has little enough of it left in an undisturbed state for what is left to be damaged. Now, next we have First Person, and George Hayter is the contributor. and writes that with surveys, you can help. One for you, please, Richard.
Yes, and he says, I love doing surveys, but the people walking in front of me didn't seem interested in surveys at all. I was leaving Hampton Court, Henry VIII's palace, 50 miles from Winchester. Entrance there costs a few quid, but coughing up didn't stop me enjoying the magnificent rooms and intricate gardens. Now I was ready to leave and found myself following a man and woman as I approached the Tudor front door. Waiting with staff, standing at the exit, was someone holding a clipboard, and I wondered if she might be conducting a survey. She tentatively intercepted the couple ahead of me. Her approach was dismissed by the man with a curt hand gesture. The woman ignored him. I thought it rather rude of them. I would have enjoyed answering the survey questions, but the clipboard woman didn't ask me. I expect her instructions were to approach every 10th person or 20th person or some such formula to be sure of a random sample of respondents. Why did those Hampton Court visitors give such short shrift to the woman who had approached them with perfect civility? Maybe they didn't speak English. Maybe they were in a hurry. Maybe they were plain unhelpful. But I think they probably feared getting involved with a time-consuming, boring interrogation for a pointless survey of no interest to them. No one can blame them for that attitude, because many people don't realise that surveys are essential for the efficient working of the country. Researching people's experiences and opinions is a feature of a just society and an advanced economy. Finding out what visitors think has to be part of managing an attraction like Hampton Court. If the historic Royal Palace's charity tried running the place without customer research, they would rightly be criticised for failing to listen to customers. Whatever you're in charge of, a palace or a company or an entire country, you have to get some idea of whether the people you are trying to serve are satisfied. How can you improve if you don't know what you're doing wrong? A lot of people grasp the value of research because they went to university, but I appreciate it because of a part-time job. For 10 years, I gather statistics for the government by working for the National Centre for Social Research. I was paid to try and persuade people to answer questions on everything from their meals to their savings and from how much they cycled to how much they liked the neighbourhood they lived in. Most of the research was funded by government departments such as transport, work and pensions, or communities and local government. Sometimes I had to try and get households to keep a diary of all their travel for a week by bus, car, bike, whatever. They were even asked to log walking if they went more than a mile. All advanced countries do similar research. It's mostly to design and fine-tune policies such as improving health, cutting pollution and reducing poverty. Addresses were chosen at random, and I had to knock at the door and explain that policymakers rely on the public to be open about their opinions and experiences. Although most people in Britain do agree to take part, sadly the proportion helping is reducing over time, perhaps because people are getting busier. Most people who take part seem to enjoy it. Many questions are stimulating and make you think about policy dilemmas. Once I worked on a sex survey. Participants answered the most intimate questions by pressing buttons and I couldn't see their responses. Questions included frequency of intercourse, particularly one-night stands. The research was for the National Health Service, which is always keen to understand latest lifestyle changes of young people in particular, to know how to reduce unwanted teenage pregnancy and sexually transmitted illness, which both cost society and the NHS money.
Now, I've got two items here from Belgarum, who gives an alternative view of some of the news. The first one is headed National News, in inverted commas, journalism. What's this new story spotted on the Mail Online this week? Former ITN anchor Alistair Stewart loses planning row with upmarket farm shop after saying its bid to sell clothes and jewellery would destroy the character of town. Well, that rings a bell. Wasn't this a story about Long Barn in Alresford, covered in the Chronicle last July? Indeed it was. A tale of modern national news journalism. Mr Stewart has been in the news after resigning over a wayward tweet that was leapt upon by the people who enjoy being offended. The Mail Online number crunched algorithm watchers had seen the story was popular with readers, and so it has dug up a follow-up story in the hope that it, too, will be popular, even if it is more than 6 months old. And the second item is headed From a Shed to the Music Awards. A music artist who recorded her album in a Twyford garden shed has been nominated for a prestigious award. Miranda Mulholland from Canada spent many days with music promoter Oliver Gray when in the UK. By appointment or chance, the album she recorded in his shed, which was spruced up with high-tech music equipment, has earned her nomination for the Juno Awards. Now Oliver, his shed, and his cat Poppy have been named checked in the Globe and Mail, Canada's most widely read newspaper. In the story, Miranda is pictured with Poppy, who she has looked after a number of times as a favour. Oliver Gray said, "Every review of Miranda's album praises Poppy for being a creative inspiration. As anyone who has met her can confirm, Poppy is nothing but trouble. But if she decides she likes you, you're safe. Luckily, she likes Miranda." When asked why she recorded her album in Twyford, Miranda said, "Well, it was sort of a matter of luck and circumstance. I hadn't really considered doing anything like this. I just fell in love with this village. To me, living in Ontario, to go to a village where you're an hour and a quarter from London by train, but you're surrounded by rolling hills and beautiful waterways and great walks, it's just magical. My band, Harrow Fair, is really busy, and we have our own record coming out in the spring. I realised that I would have time in the summer, and since I'm not good at sitting still and just relaxing, I thought it'd be perfect to do something while I was in Twyford. In the back garden of the house in Twyford, there's a little cottage. It was a perfect place for a blank canvas. We recorded the album completely live. There was a feeling that we were making something that was just capturing a really specific time and place." And you'll be pleased to know that there's a photograph attached to this which shows Miranda, Poppy the cat, and the shed.
Thank you very much, Peter. So, historical items. 200 years ago, February the 14th, 1820. On Monday, February the 2nd, the hounds met at Long Parish Station, rather on the borders of the Hursley County, which accounted for the relatively small field, who enjoyed a pleasant day's sport. Hounds quickly found on Captain Harby's portion of Harewood. Scent was not very grand, but after a bustling a brace of foxes above the covert and outlying fields, one was marked to ground in Mr. Spratt's field. Second item, 200 years ago. We observe with regret that Sir T. Freeman Heathcote Bart has announced his intention of declining to represent this country in Parliament in consequence of ill health. The only avowed candidate at present is John Fleming, Esquire.
100 years ago was February the 14th, 1920. Two very exciting items here. The Winchester Institute won their second round in the Hampshire County Chess Trophy competition on Saturday when they met the Andover Club at the Institute. Although from the score it would appear an easy win for a local team, it was far from being so, as at the close of time, after 3 hours' play, the boards were in the balances. And the second item. It was a kindly thought on the part of the mayor and mayoress and a graceful act of courtesy towards their predecessors in office to issue invitations to an at-home at the Guildhall on Monday from 4 to 6 o'clock p.m.
And 50 years ago, February the 14th, 1970, a three-man YMCA team were cross-examined for an hour and a quarter on Wednesday by Winchester's planning committee about their plans for a new centre at Wick. Then the committee, for the second month running, decided to defer the matter until they had more information. The committee spent another half an hour, making a total of an hour and three quarters devoted to the scheme, in a private discussion before deciding that it could not come to a decision without seeing further plans.
25 years ago, February the 10th, 1995. Defending sensitive sites in Winchester from development will become increasingly difficult if Hampshire County Council does not rethink its planning blueprint for the 21st century. That's the warning from Eagle Star, which believes that housing proposals for greenfield sites at Barton Farm, Bushfield Camp and Kingsworthy will be impossible to resist if the county does not change the policy of infilling and add-ons currently proposed for the Hampshire County Structure Plan Review. In fact, the insurance giant, which wants to build a £5,000 home new town at Mitchelderva Station, claims this policy will leave historic cities like Winchester extremely vulnerable to smaller scale add-on developments. Proposals outlined in the consultation document Hampshire 2011 suggest that Hampshire can accommodate 48,000 new homes between 2001 and 2011 without resorting to new towns like Mitchelderva Station. The County Council is proposing to site 20,000 houses within existing built-up areas, 17,000 houses at four major development areas at Waterlooville, Horton Heath, Basingstoke and Andover, and up to 4,000 houses west of the Hamble in the New Forest District at Halterworth and Crampmore near Romsey and in the Fareham and South Winchester districts. But this still leaves 7,000 houses to be provided in smaller developments of 250 at sites to be identified in local plans. This, say Eagle Star, is where the danger lies.
And here we move on to the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday, the 15th of February, the sun will set at 5:20 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 19th of February, the sun will rise at 7:11 a.m. and will set again at 5:27 p.m. And moving on now to items of general news. Claire, can we have your first article, please?
This is about a deer rescued after its antlers caught in a net.
Ooh.
A roebuck has been rescued after becoming tangled up in a cricket net in Whiteley. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service were called after the trapped animal was spotted at Burridge Cricket Club at about 10 a.m. on Friday, February the 7th. The RSPCA were also called and staff from both organisations helped to free the roebuck. The animal had become more and more stuck as it panicked, according to HFRS animal rescue specialist Jim Green. He said, "We found a young male roe deer which had got caught, its antlers caught in the netting. As the deer had panicked, it had got more and more stuck. Deer can get stressed very quickly and don't like human contact." The RSPCA had previously issued a warning regarding nets, stating, "We understand that many people are not aware that netting used to fence off areas and netting used for gardening or in sport can be really dangerous for animals. We're trying to raise awareness of this. We would urge those using netting for sports to remove and store all nets after their game and put any discarded or old netting safely in a bin. Any garden netting, such as pond netting, should be replaced with solid metal mesh."
Hampshire is battered by Ciara. Fallen trees and flooded roads caused travel disruption as Storm Ciara descended on Hampshire. Gale force winds of up to 80 miles an hour swept across the county, which saw a number of trees come crashing down on main routes. Motorists were urged to avoid Alsford Road when a large tree fell after being battered by the wind. In Cromwell Road, Stanmore, a car was left crushed by a tree, and a car in Bradley Road, Hairstock, was narrowly missed by another. A collapsed tree in Alexandra Road, Chandler's Ford, took down a street lamp, telephone lines and a road name sign. But it wasn't just negative stories that came from the storm. Jay Tucker, 31, was driving down Green Lane in Hambledon on a Sunday evening when he noticed police struggling to move a tree that was blocking the way. The carpenter was on the way home from a Sunday roast, and after dropping his family home, he returned to help him out with his chainsaw. Within half an hour, the tree was chopped up and removed. Police officers from Winchester later tweeted, "Thank you so much to Jay, who stopped to cut up a tree down this evening with his chainsaw." A number of volunteers, including Twitter user Rob54429-1940, also spent their weekend voluntarily clearing the roads. Rob said he spent an hour on Saturday clearing debris and reopening roads, including the A31, on his own. The Met Office issued a yellow weather warning for Monday as very strong winds moved across the far south of England. Storm Ciara triggered several national severe weather warnings from the Met, and winds as high as 100 miles an hour recorded in the UK. Other parts of the country, there were power cuts and severe flooding. Two people died as a result of the weather, one near Winchester on the A33.
Two toilets at risk of closure. The future of public toilets in Winchester are being considered by the City Council as it tries to save millions of pounds. A report into financial strategy for the next 4 years details that two conveniences could close, one of which offers 24-hour provision. The Council has earmarked the closure of the toilets in Middlebrook Street and in Worthy Lane to save £50,000. Councillor Neil Cutler, Cabinet Member for Finance and Risk, said, "Middlebrook Street is not well used, it's had its problems with antisocial behaviour, and there are two conveniences within reasonable walking distance, within a few hundred yards. In fact, I think the police had actually asked for it to be closed at one point. The toilets are currently temporarily closed." The other on the list is Worthy Lane, where the coach park currently is, but this has sparked concern from the future of the Council's Scrutiny Committee. Council member Councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "Can we have some sort of research done into the usage of the 24-hour toilets, as this is the last of the 24-hour toilets that is open in Winchester, and it will be used by taxi drivers, emergency services and other people that have legitimate reasons to be out and about in the middle of the night or early in the morning. So I think it would be sensible, before we make this change, just to make sure that, first of all, there was any provision required, and if so, where it should be. Following the concern, work has already been undertaken on whether the toilets should be closed and a proposal in place to provide a 24-hour provision." Councillor Cutler said, "We will look into that. It won't be closed until the coach park moves anyway, and we will make sure that no one is inconvenienced."
Runners brave Storm Ciara. Runners with a mission braved Storm Ciara to raise awareness of controversial plans to build an incinerator close to Barton Stacey. 100 people took part in the Love Run, which saw participants jog between the village and Long Parish, the two villages set to be most affected by the proposal. The 10K run was organised to highlight the fight against the proposed waste-to-energy plant by American company Wheelabrator. The two villages are the closest communities to the A303 Barton-Stacey junction, where the incinerator could be built, and the route past well-loved views, which campaigners say will be destroyed if the incinerator is given the go-ahead. Some started from Barton Stacey and others from Long Parish, with plenty of high fives as they passed each other while battling the storm-force winds. A cluster of politicians were also on hand, with Test Valley Borough Council leader Councillor Phil North started the Barton Stacey contingent and then ran the course, while fellow councillor David Drew acted as a marshal after waving off the Long Parish runners. Hampshire County Councillor Andrew Gibson was among the runners, and Romsey and Southampton North MP Caroline Noakes dispensed drinks and jelly babies at the halfway mark. Run organiser Jeremy Barber declared the event enjoyable and memorable. He added, "The welcome in the village halls was amazing. It's great that this event has got us talking together and helped focus on the threat to our beautiful countryside. The weather probably helped create a buzz of fun and achievement. The event raised several hundred pounds for the Keep Test Valley Beautiful campaigners, who are gearing up for the next stage of the fight when Wheelabrator submit their formal planning application later this year."
This item follows one that was current just last month about the issues at Winchester Prison. And this headline is "Worst Year for Self-Harm in Jail. Cases of self-harm have hit a record high among inmates at Winchester Prison. The Prison Reform Trust says a national failure to ensure humane conditions for prisoners and deal with their mental health problems is being paid for in human misery and distress. Ministry of Justice data shows that there were 817 self-harm incidents recorded at Winchester in the 12 months to September 2019, the highest figure since comparable records began in 2005. Of those, at least 74 needed hospital treatment. Across prisons in England and Wales, self-harm incidents hit a record high of 61,500 over the same period. Overall, nearly 13,000 prisoners were recorded self-harming, a record high. Peter Dawson, director of the Prison Reform Trust, said the figures revealed a hidden crisis of ever-rising levels of prisoner self-harm. A failure to ensure decent and humane conditions, as well as respond effectively to the large proportion of people in prison with serious mental health problems, is being paid for in human misery and distress. The government needs a plan to restore purpose and hope to our prisons. Sending more people in prison longer will make matters worse.
Council looks to fill £7 million gap. Council bosses have unveiled plans to cut its predicted deficit of almost £7 million over the next 4 years, which will see an increase in parking charges and council tax to balance the books. Winchester City Council had projected a shortfall of nearly £16 million, but it has said that it has found operational savings of £9 million over that period. Councillor Martin Todd, the authority's cabinet member for service quality and transformation, said that the key focus when delivering its financial strategy was tackling climate change and offering good service to residents. He said, "It is about being prudent in a very difficult funding situation. The one thing we know is that there are sources of income that we currently get that we won't be getting in the future. Around £5 million of the shortfall is associated with a cut in funding from central government." And Cabinet Member for Finance and Risk, Councillor Neil Cutler, said, "What is key to our planning is to make sure that we take action now so that we're in a position to reduce those deficits over the four-year period, partly because circumstances are so uncertain. In order to make up some of the deficit, the council has set its sights on parking with proposals to increase charges by 3% for all car parks across the district, along with introducing evening charges and a £2 flat rate for Sundays for all central car parks. We will be looking very carefully. If we see we have made a mistake, then we will have to adjust, but I don't believe we will have done. The main focus, when we are trying to get people to park further out, is what we call the central air quality management zone. That's where we have a problem, and the car park's extra movements to those car parks in that zone contribute to the air quality problem we have in the centre. It is proposed that £400,000 would be spent on better park and ride services, extending Sunday service from St Catherine's, improving parking enforcement, and a further £105,000 in support feasibility studies on Central Winchester. Residents are also set to see their council tax bills rise. The authority says that the current amount paid to the City Council by residents in Band D properties will rise from £138.92 to £143.09 for the 12 months starting April the 1st, while those living in the city centre will see the amount rise from £69.19 to £71.27.
Long-running Any Questions radio show returns to Winchester. The spotlight shone on Winchester as BBC Radio 4's Any Questions was broadcast from Winchester University. A packed audience listened to the panel answer five questions on the climate emergency, gay rights, Islamic terrorists in prison, Brexit, and the political landscape, and the future of the BBC. The panel was former Southampton Itchen MP John Denham, now a professor at Southampton University, Lord Deben, the former Conservative Minister, John Gummer, left-wing Guardian columnist Owen Jones, and right-wing Sun columnist Olivia Attlee. If show producers were hoping for political fireworks, they would have been disappointed, as the 50 minutes comprised largely thoughtful debate, with only the last question sparking anything heated. Firstly, Andrew Smith asked the panel about the climate summit in Glasgow, and Owen Jones got loud applause by saying it was not about climate change, but a climate emergency, and a bigger threat to civilization than Brexit. Sylvia Peach, a former local GP, asked about government plans to hold Islamic terrorists in prison for longer. John Denham pointed out that there were 1,000 radicalized prisoners in UK jails, but only 200 were in prison for terrorism-related offences. The probation system was in chaos following government funding cuts. Lord Deben pointed out that the UK locks up twice as many people as France or Germany. Do we feel twice as safe as in Paris or Berlin? He asked. Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group on Winchester City Council, asked whether Brexit has changed the landscape for political parties, with the Tories winning once rock-solid Labour seats in the Midlands and the North. Olivia Attlee said the Conservatives at the general election had better understood than Labour the reasons for Brexit and been able to capture former socialist strongholds. The last questioner, Elizabeth Sin, asked about their proposal to decriminalise the non-payment of the BBC licence fee. Former Tory Minister Lord Deben joined with Mr Jones and Professor Denham, currently Director of the Centre for English Identity and Politics, to defend the licence fee as the best way to guarantee a high-quality public broadcasting service. Mr Jones asked, do we want Fox News to take over? That is what we are talking about, referring to the right-wing station in the USA. Ms. Utley said that the licence fee stemmed from 1946 and was no longer fit for purpose in the 21st century, when most young people did not watch the BBC. The first ever episode of the BBC Radio 4 programme was broadcast from Winchester Guildhall in October 1948 and returned to the city in the mid-1990s and then 2008 to celebrate its 60th anniversary at Henry Beaufort School, and again in 2011 when it was broadcast from Kingsworthy Primary School.
And some rather more encouraging news. Maternity ward is praised by women. Women giving birth at a Hampshire hospital feel they're treated with kindness, understanding, respect and dignity, according to a new survey. The 2019 Maternity Survey asked mums who gave birth in February 2019 to answer questions about different aspects of their care and treatment. The report from the Care Quality Commission shows New Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs maternity services at Andover War Memorial, Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital and Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, scored above the national average for each question in the survey compared with a range of results from 125 other NHS trusts. For each question, responses are converted to scores on a scale of 0 to 10. Hampshire Hospital scored 9.4 out of 10 when women were asked if they were treated with respect and dignity. Faye Caller, head of midwifery and hospitals health at Hampshire Hospital, said, "I'm delighted to hear that women we care for feel they are treated with understanding, respect, kindness and dignity. It's fantastic to know that the dedication and compassion shown by them is making a real difference to women and their families. I was especially pleased to see that we scored 9.6 when women were asked if they were spoken to in a way they could understand during labour and birth. Communication is incredibly important in making sure that women are informed and have the best possible experiences."
Campaign to buy land for Nature Reserve. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has launched a major appeal to raise funds for an important land purchase to the east of Winchester, Deacon Hill. Deacon Hill is a 10-hectare patchwork of scrub and chalk grassland overlooking the Chilcombe Valley, north of the Morstead Road and near the wastewater treatment centre. The Trust says that it is the only remaining local stronghold for the Duke of Burgundy butterfly. Without the introduction of winter grazing and clearance of scrub, the shouty fear that wildlife benefited from the site, particularly the Duke of Burgundy colony, would be lost. The Trust has been working for many years to reconnect the remaining chalk grassland sites in this area to create a joined-up network for nature. The site is located close to St Catherine's Hill Nature Reserve and adjacent to the Dongas, another Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust managed chalk grassland site, and an area at the centre of the environmental campaign from 1992 to 94 to stop the M3 cutting through Twyford Down. These connect to the Hockley Meadows Farm between Twyford and Winchester, which the Trust purchased in 2017 after a fundraising appeal. Across the valley from Deacon Hill sits Butterfly Conservation's Magdalen Hill Down Nature Reserve, now a haven for wildflowers and butterflies following years of careful restoration and management. The last time the land was ploughed was around 20 years ago. Deacon Hill is an important piece of the jigsaw in connecting up all of these sites. In a statement, the Trust said, "By purchasing this land, we could create a flourishing landscape for wildlife to the east of Winchester, but we need your help to make it happen." Thanks to a generous gift in the will of a member, the Trust already has a contribution towards the purchase price, but there is an urgent need to raise £150,000 to complete the purchase before the end of March.
And I'm sorry to say that that brings us to the end of all the items we have for you this week. But before we go, Another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711 988. And we say thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
And Peter.
Goodbye.
Thank you for standing in this week. And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. And again, thank you for listening, and we wish you a happy week. Goodbye.